Once the upstairs brain re-enters the picture, you can begin to respond to the issue using logic and reason. Did you not like it that Daddy washed your hair like that? Do you have any ideas about how we should wash your hair next time? Once he is in a more receptive place, you can also talk about appropriate and inappropriate behavior and about any possible consequences. I know you were really angry about the water splashing in your face, but it's not okay to hit when you're mad. You can use words and tell Daddy, "I don't like that. Please stop." Your discipline can now maintain your authority. That's crucial, but you can do so from a more informed and compassionate position. And your child is more likely to internalize a lesson because you're teaching it when his brain is more receptive to learning. As any veteran parent knows, flipping the lid isn't unique to toddlers. It may look different when it occurs in a 10-year-old, but a child of any age, or even an adult, is prone to having the downstairs brain take over in high emotion situations. That's why an awareness of the upstairs brain and the downstairs brain and the tantrums that originate from each place can help us be much more effective as we discipline our children. We can more clearly see when it's time to draw the line and when it's time to bring lots of nurturing compassion to help engage the upstairs brain. Tantrums provide just one example of how practical this upstairs, downstairs knowledge can be. Now, let's talk about other ways you can help develop your child's upstairs brain and allow it to become stronger and more integrated with the downstairs brain.
What you can do, helping develop and integrate your child's upstairs brain. Whole brain strategy number 3, engage, don't enrage, appealing to the upstairs brain. Ask yourself as you interact with your kids through the day, which part of their brain you're appealing to. Are you engaging the upstairs, or are you triggering the downstairs? The answer to this question can go a long way toward determining the outcome of one of those delicately balanced parenting moments. Here's a story about a time I faced just such a moment with my son. While eating out at one of our favorite Mexican restaurants, I noticed that my 4-year-old had left the table and was standing behind a pillar about 10 feet away. As much as I love him, and as adorable as he is most of the time, when I saw his angry, defiant face, coupled with his repeated tongue thrusting, aimed at our table, adorable was not the word that came to my mind. A few diners at surrounding tables noticed and looked at my husband Scott and me to see how we were going to handle the situation. In that moment, Scott and I felt the pressure and judgment of those watching and expecting us to lay down the law about manners at a restaurant. I clearly saw two choices as I walked over and crouched down eye level with my son. Option number one, I could go the traditional command and demand route and open with a cliched threat uttered in a stern tone, "Stop making faces, young man. Go sit down and eat your lunch or you won't get any dessert." At times, option one might be an appropriate parental response. But for my little guy, this verbal and nonverbal confrontation would have triggered all kinds of reactive emotions in his downstairs brain, the part scientists call the reptilian brain, and he would have fought back like a reptile under attack. Or option number two, I could tap into his upstairs brain in an effort to get more of a thinking, as opposed to a fighting-reacting, response. Now, I make plenty of mistakes as I parent my boys, as they'll freely tell you. But just the day before, I had given a lecture to a group of parents about the upstairs and downstairs brain, and about using everyday challenges, the survival moments, as opportunities to help our kids thrive. So, luckily for my son, all of that was fresh in my mind. I decided to choose option number two. I started with an observation. "You look like you feel angry. Is that right? Remember connect and redirect?" He scrunched up his face in ferocity, stuck out his tongue again, and loudly proclaimed, "Yes!" I was actually relieved that he stopped there. It wouldn't have been at all unlike him to add his latest favorite insult and call me Fartface Jones. I swear I don't know where they learn this stuff. I asked him what he felt angry about and discovered that he was furious that Scott had told him he needed to eat at least half of his quesadilla before he could have dessert. I explained that I could see why that would be disappointing, and I said, well, Daddy's really good at negotiating. Decide what you think would be a fair amount to eat, and then go talk to him about it. Let me know if you need help coming up with your plan. I tousled his hair, returned to the table, and watched his once again adorable face show evidence of doing some hard thinking. His upstairs brain was definitely engaged. In fact, it was at war with his downstairs brain. So far, we had avoided a blow-up, but it still felt like a dangerous fuse might be burning within him. Within 15 seconds or so, my son returned and said to Scott in an angry tone of voice, "Dad, I don't want to eat half of my quesadilla, and I want dessert." Scott's response perfectly dovetailed with my own. "Well, what do you think would be a fair amount?" The answer came with slow, firm resolve. "I've got one word for you. 10 bites. What makes this unmathematical response even funnier is that 10 bites meant that he would eat well over half the quesadilla. So Scott accepted the counteroffer, my son happily gobbled down 10 bites, and then his dessert. And the whole family, as well as the restaurant's other patrons, got to enjoy lunch with no further incidents. My son's downstairs brain never fully took over, which, luckily for us, meant that his upstairs brain had won the day. Again, option number one would have been perfectly fine, even appropriate, but it also would have missed an opportunity. My son would have missed a chance to see that relationships are about connection, communication, and compromise. He would have missed a chance to feel empowered that he can make choices, affect his environment, and solve problems. In short, he would have missed an opportunity to exercise and develop his upstairs brain. And I hasten to point out that even though I chose option number two, Scott and I still had to address the misbehavior part of the incident. Once our son was more in control of himself and could actually be receptive to what we had to say, we discussed the importance of being respectful and using good manners in a restaurant, even when he's unhappy.
This is an example of how simple awareness of the downstairs and upstairs brain can have a direct and immediate impact on the way we parent and discipline our children. Notice that when the challenge arose, Tina asked herself, "Which part of the brain do I want to appeal to here?" She could have gotten what she wanted by challenging her son and demanding that he change his behavior immediately. She has enough authority in his eyes that he would have obeyed, albeit resentfully. But that approach would have triggered the downstairs brain, and his anger and feelings of unfairness would have raged within him. So instead, Tina engaged his upstairs brain by helping him think through the situation and find a way to negotiate with his father. Let's make one thing clear. Sometimes there is no place for negotiation in parent-child interactions. Children need to respect their parents' authority, and sometimes that means that no simply means no, without wiggle room. Also, sometimes counteroffers are unacceptable. If Tina's 4-year-old had suggested that he take only 1 bite of his lunch, his dad wouldn't have been open to striking that particular deal. But as we parent and discipline our kids, we are given so many opportunities to interact in ways that engage and develop their upstairs brain. Consider this scenario. A mother refuses to buy her daughter a necklace. Their conversation could go like this. "I hate you, Mommy." "That is not okay to say. I don't want you to ever say that again." This would enrage her child's downstairs brain. Or their conversation could go like this. "I hate you, Mommy." "Wow, you're really mad." "Yeah, I hate you." "Is it because I didn't get you that necklace?" "Yes, and you're so mean." That necklace wasn't for sale. It's okay if you want to keep feeling upset, but If you'd rather, we can be problem solvers and think of another idea. How do we do that? The mother chose not to present an ultimatum that would enrage the downstairs brain. Instead, she engaged the upstairs brain by first directing her daughter to use more precise and specific words for how she was feeling. Are you feeling really mad because I didn't get you that necklace? Then, she asked her daughter to work with her to be a problem solver. Once the girl asks, "How do we do that?" the mother knows that the upstairs brain is engaged. Her daughter is now able to discuss the issue with her mom in a way that she couldn't just a few seconds ago. Now they can brainstorm together about getting another necklace at the store or making one at home. The mother can also now talk to her daughter about how to use her words when she's angry. Every time we say, "convince me," or come up with a solution that works for both of us, we give our kids the chance to practice problem solving and decision making. We help them consider appropriate behaviors and consequences, and we help them think about what another person feels and wants, all because we found a way to engage the upstairs instead of enraging the downstairs.
Whole brain strategy number 4, use it or lose it, exercising the upstairs brain. In addition to appealing to our children's upstairs brain, we also want to help them exercise it. The upstairs brain is like a muscle. When it gets used, it develops, gets stronger, and performs better. And when it gets ignored, it doesn't develop optimally, losing some of its power and ability to function. That's what we mean by use it or lose it. We want to be intentional about developing the upstairs brain of our children. As we've been saying, a strong upstairs brain balances out the downstairs brain and is essential for social and emotional intelligence. It's the foundation of solid mental health. Our job is to provide our kids with opportunity after opportunity to exercise their upstairs brain so that it can grow stronger and more powerful. As you and your children go through your day, watch for ways you can focus on and exercise different functions of the upstairs brain. Let's look at a few of them one by one. Sound decision making. One big parental temptation is to make decisions for our kids so that they consistently do the right thing. But as often as possible, we need to give them practice at making decisions for themselves. Decision-making requires what's called executive functioning, which occurs when the upstairs brain weighs different options. Considering several competing alternatives, as well as the outcomes of those choices, gives a child's upstairs brain practice, strengthening it and allowing it to work better. For very young children, this can be as simple as asking, "Do you want to wear your blue shoes or your white shoes today?" Then, as kids get older, we can give them more responsibility in the decision-making and allow them to take on some dilemmas that can really challenge them. For instance, if your 10-year-old daughter has a scheduling conflict, both her Girl Scout campout and her soccer playoff are on Saturday, and she clearly can't be in both places at the same time, encourage her to make the choice. She's much more likely to be comfortable, if not completely happy, about having to give up one commitment if she's been a part of the process of making the decision. An allowance is another terrific way to give older kids practice at dealing with difficult dilemmas. The experience of deciding between buying a computer game now or continuing to save for that new bike is a powerful way to exercise the upstairs brain. The point is to let your children wrestle with the decision and live with the consequences. Whenever you can do so responsibly, avoid solving and resist rescuing, even when they make minor mistakes or not so great choices. After all, your goal here isn't perfection on every decision right now, but an optimally developed upstairs brain down the road. Controlling emotions and the body. Another important and difficult task for little ones is to remain in control of themselves. So we need to give them skills that help them make good decisions when they are upset. Use the techniques you're probably already familiar with. Teach them to take a deep breath or count to 10. Help them express their feelings. Let them stomp their feet or punch a pillow. You can also teach them what's happening in their brains when they feel themselves losing control and how to avoid flipping their lid. We'll help you with this in the Whole Brain Kids section at the end of the chapter. Even small children have the capacity to stop and think instead of hurting someone with their words or their fists. They won't always make good decisions, but the more fully they practice alternatives other than lashing out, the stronger and more capable their upstairs brain will become.